This week on the Canadian Tech Podcast, we talk about whether Bitcoin is dead, laser-equipped vacuums, and what Derek would buy if he was CEO of Microsoft. That's all next on the Canadian Tech Podcast.
Welcome to the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 58, for Thursday, February the 4th, 2016. My name is Stuart Clark.
And my name is Derek Silva.
Well, Derek, we've had, again, in another week. I can't believe we're into February already. I don't know what happened to January, although based on the weather, we actually had a little touch of April the last 2 days.
Yeah, I wasn't complaining. It's been, yesterday we broke record highs by doubling the old record. It was 7 point something, and now it's 14.4 for February 3rd. So, I'm not complaining.
Yeah, I had a confession. I was actually sitting out on the back patio on my chair doing email yesterday. Had a sweater on, but God, it was gorgeous.
Yeah, it was really nice. I went for a walk yesterday afternoon, like left work for a little bit for about 15, 20 minutes just to make sure I got to enjoy it for a little bit.
Exactly. And I actually, even though not all of them overwinter, I actually saw my first robin in February yesterday.
Nice.
Just shows you. Yeah, but no, I did do some research. I found out not all of them, some of them do overwinter. So
yes.
It's not as rare as I thought. So
that and there are finches and stuff that don't hibernate or anything. They just keep at it, and you'll see them over by Covent Garden Market and places like that, or Victoria Park. They're just out and about and tweeting and looking for little seeds and buds and that sort of thing.
Well, they were at my bird feeders yesterday, but I told this robin he's in for a hell of a shock, you know, the next couple of days when it cools down again.
So. Yeah, it's coming right back down.
He didn't seem to listen to me. I don't know. Go figure.
Yeah, we're back down to zero basically today, and we're probably still going to get snow again, and that's fine. I expect that at this time of year, but come March 21st, I want above zero temperatures with no snow. Yeah.
That's not
so much to ask. Yeah. Come on, El Nino. Okay. Give me a break here. Well, El Nino's already given me quite the break this winter.
Oh, she has. Exactly.
El Nino, and then La Nina is the inverse.
Ah, yes. Thank you for that correction. You're absolutely right. So, okay. Let's get on with it.
Yeah.
A whole breadth of stories here. This is one I found because I've always been kind of interested in gaming and artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. Google's got an AI project, and they've actually now it's called AlphaGo, and it's the first AI to actually win against a professional Go player. Now, for some people, you probably have two questions. Didn't IBM have something beat chess, and what's the difference between chess and Go? Well, just briefly, Go is a game out of Japan, and it's actually in many ways more complex than chess, deceptively simple. And that's also been a big, yardstick to go from when you get to a point where it can beat a professional Go player. Now, this guy, what it beat wasn't the best in the world, but he was certainly the top European player.
Yep.
And it really points to how some of this AI stuff's using. So in the show notes, we've got the column. We've also got a counterpoint where, in some ways, it's kind of neat where you have things like this, things that can beat chess and Jeopardy and Go, but what are the actual technology and engineering, what can it do for business in that? But it's interesting when you look at some of the specs involved for this. And chess on average may have like 32 possible moves in most turns, or Go has about 250.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more moves behind it.
And then those 250 have 250. We all have 250. Like it is a much deeper rabbit hole than calculating all the possible moves for chess, which apparently are an average of 35 on each move. So, 35 times 35 times 35 is obviously much simpler to solve than 250 times 250. Plus, I think you're about to get to this, but the other major difference is that the IBM AI from a few years ago that beat the world chess champion did it by brute force.
Yeah.
Whereas the deep learning neural net style artificial intelligence operates much more closely to a human brain. It still has advantages, obviously, but certainly this one operates at a much more human-like level than just calculating, what the next 100 moves possibly could be, and then finishing that person off as quickly as possible in chess.
Right, exactly. So, you know, and this can lead to a lot more things, even things like, you know, when you ask Siri directions to the coffee shop, you know, in some ways, some of this breakthroughs in AI help that. So, you know, it's something that's certainly going to help. But of course, we all worry about, you know, one of these things becoming Skynet and killing us all. But, you know, that's, again, you have to take the good with the bad, I guess.
I'm going to mostly take the good here, mostly because I think there are some really smart, well-intentioned people sounding the alarm on letting AI research get a little too crazy or go a little bit too far down the rabbit hole. And second, like you just alluded to, like Google Maps now, because they have so much data, up until I think even just 6 months ago, the default route that Google Map would give you was the shortest, regardless of how convoluted that may have looked on the map. Mm-hmm. And now, because of all the data they have and you know, billions of people riding around in their cars with Google Maps enabled and location services on, and every once in a while you do send your location back to Google, which is how they can tell you in Google Now, hey, you're nearby restaurants that other people really like, and here are the ratings and that sort of thing. It will actually give you the fastest route now. So instead of telling you to, you know, maybe take 401 to Flying J, if you're somewhere where a different route will actually get you there faster, they'll tell you to do that instead,
right,
even though it might be longer distance-wise.
Right,
which is
exactly
phenomenal. I mean, like, that's the sort of thing that FedEx or like that any logistical company dreams about is, mm-hmm, you know, how do we get it done faster? How do we, delivery people, but how do we reduce hours spent in the car, or like, you know, or how do we deliver more packages in the day when obviously we can't just extend the day?
Well, exactly. So, and as we're going to be talking about later on in the story, this sort of technology extends to other industries like agriculture and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So no, it's actually fascinating. I love seeing stuff like this. And if you've never played Go or had a look, it's definitely worth a try. It's actually a very fascinating game. Again, it's very simple to learn, but it just
takes a long time to master. Well, like chess is simple to learn, but to actually be great at it takes a lot of time and practice.
Exactly. And there's a lot of strategy, and, you know, like other things, you can go onto YouTube and there's literally where they have championship games that are on primetime television in Japan. That's how big it is over there. So
like cricket in some places, like
exactly,
not terribly popular here, but elsewhere,
I know,
hugely popular.
It needs to be more popular here.
No, it doesn't.
I can more easily catch the games.
No, it doesn't. I would argue that cricket is probably a lot more confusing than any other game I've ever seen.
No, because you know what? If you want to try and explain baseball to a European, they find it confusing.
True, but
so explaining, it depends where you are.
Yes, it does. For me, I obviously understand baseball. Cricket is extremely confusing. Why can't we just get a game done in one day? Like, come on.
I'll have to give you a lesson. Mm-hmm. But what's nice about cricket is you could actually have a drink during the intermission.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I can have a drink during any sport I play because
I know, but you can have an alcoholic drink during it.
Well, sure, I can.
You can have a good G&T or something. Anyway, okay, we're going way off the thing.
Yeah, let's get back on the rails here.
We're going to move on to the next one. You definitely know more about this one. High-profile developer declares Bitcoin doomed, leaves the currency project.
And
now, I only know a little bit about Bitcoin, some of the basics, but go ahead and fill us in.
Okay, so if you don't know, Bitcoin is what's called a cryptocurrency. And this thing called the blockchain basically underlies it all. The general premise is that there is actually a limited number of bitcoins that can be generated. Computers all over the world can solve mathematical problems in order to unlock additional bitcoin or fractions of a bitcoin. Bitcoin can actually be divided, I think, up into like 100 decimal places, something like that. So which helps solve if there's only like, let's say 50 million Bitcoin in the world, like, well, how do you give Bitcoin to other people? Well, you can give them fractions, and then the fractions of a Bitcoin are worth whatever U.S. dollars or whatever Canadian dollars, depending on the current level of activity, just like any other foreign exchange happens. So the problems here, so a gentleman named Mike Hearn, who has been a developer for the Bitcoin Foundation for quite a while, he's basically calling it dead, or at least a dead experiment. A few reasons. One, over 50% of the computing power, I'll call it for simplicity's sake, that is meant to unlock additional Bitcoin is actually concentrated by amongst two Chinese individuals in China. That's a huge problem because essentially they can unlock more Bitcoin faster than everybody else. Mm-hmm. And they're also, their computing power is also responsible for verifying the anonymous transactions, Bitcoin transactions that happen between individuals or organizations. And which brings us to the second problem is that the Bitcoin network as a whole can only verify 3 to 7 transactions per second.
Wow.
Now, I mean, think about going to the grocery store. I won't use a specific chain name. Go into the grocery store and, you know, you could have a million odd cashiers. Mm-hmm. But regardless of how many cashiers there are, they can only process 3 to 7 people at a time.
Yeah, that might make some backups.
That's ridiculous. And so, I mean, like, he's been fighting against the powers that be with Bitcoin and trying to push changes through that would prevent these sorts of bottlenecks from happening. But because everything is so concentrated now and there's a big whole political bunch of BS, like any, you know, sufficiently large organization achieves, things just aren't changing. And so, and I can't, unfortunately, I can't really disagree with everything that's going wrong right now and the unwillingness to adapt, change, etc. I haven't owned any Bitcoin. I've never bought any Bitcoin. I tried to mine some Litecoin and some Feathercoin once. It really couldn't get it working. It's not very easy.
Yeah, right.
I just thought, you know, I'm looking at this and I'm going, yep, it's dead. I mean, like, it's never going to reach mass adoption at this rate. And so whether another cryptocurrency comes in to replace it, you know, and is better because of it doesn't have these limitations, or we have to wait for something else to come along, I'm not sure. But Bitcoin is dead. Long live Bitcoin.
Well, and I think, as they say, it's an interesting experiment. But yeah, definitely, it shows that you can have a great idea, but sometimes if you don't have a good team working on it, or you know, the factors that can affect it, you know, this can definitely be a problem. So yeah, anyone's interested in this, definitely worth reading the article we've posted and the blog post from the developer in question. It does bring up a lot. The last time I remember hearing about Bitcoin is when I was at the Unlab. We had a little server farm, and we had a couple of guys approach us wanting to mine Bitcoins, and we really didn't want to get into that. And now I'm glad we didn't.
Well, I mean, it is very, very compute intensive.
Yeah, exactly.
You really do. It's kind of like the oil sands thing, where it needs to be worth a certain amount of money.
Yep.
Like, one Bitcoin needs to be worth a certain amount of money, and your power to computing ratio needs to be at a certain level in order to really make it worth it.
Yeah, to make
and,
it.
And I mean, like, I don't know what those values are right now, but I have a feeling that it's with 50% of the computing power concentrated in a place like China, it probably makes it incredibly unprofitable to do it just about anywhere
exactly.
else.
Exactly. So, all right. Well, we'll have to see what happens. Okay. Now, here's one for now. Now, here's one. We're going to talk about a robot vacuum. For all the husbands and boyfriends out there, let me just give you a word of advice from a married guy. This is very cool, but it's not the kind of gift you buy your wife for Valentine's Day.
No.
Derek, tell us all about this.
So, many people know about Roombas, made by a company called iRobot.
Yep.
The whole thing with a Roomba is that with sufficient time, it will eventually, through basically trial and error, and bouncing around your living room or your dining room or what have you, vacuum your entire floor.
Mm-hmm.
The cool thing about a... so I will say, the Roomba 980 does have vision through a low-res camera, but okay. It's still not very good.
Right.
There's a company here called Neato. They have a new... This is not their first product, but they have a new robot vacuum called the BotVac Connected. And it has LiDAR. LiDAR being the same laser-based radar-type technology that a lot of self-driving car companies are using in order to see the vehicles around them, you know, understand the road and the road conditions and that sort of thing. You'd think that'd be incredibly expensive. Like, wow, like if it's the same type of technology Google's put on top of their cars, this has to be thousands of dollars. Amazingly, BotVac has invented this really inexpensive mode of putting LiDAR into their machines or into their robot vacuums. Also given the robot vacuum Wi-Fi access and a smartphone app, which apparently is not great, but regardless, it's there.
It's a start.
Yeah, it is a start. And the LiDAR actually has 360-degree vision and actually learns the layout of your room.
Cool.
So instead of just bouncing around for 2 hours and eventually getting the job done, it actually figures out how the room's done. And kind of like what we were talking about earlier with the AI playing Go, actually he navigates the room properly instead of just bouncing around.
Right. It'll be interesting to see, because one thing I always find amusing with the Roombas is reactions to pets. You know, sometimes the cat will want to ride on top or whatever. So, it'll be interesting to see how it handles like something like that. If it sees something and then it turns back and it's not there anymore. There's actually on the Ars Technica article, the link we're going to put in the show notes, is actually a very neat little animated picture of it. Navigating the room in that, and it's quite fascinating, and you can see the calmness as he walks, you know, his two legs literally.
It's really cool.
It's kind of cool. So it'll be interesting. So how much is this going to cost those of us?
So this is $700 US.
Okay.
And when you compare that to a Roomba that has very mediocre technology, relatively speaking, that's $900 US. So
right.
this is better technology, more efficient cleaning for $200 US less than what
right.
the comparable, somewhat close comparable Roomba is. And and there's already a community that's sprung up around this inexpensive LiDAR that they've put into the BotVac Connected because, as I said earlier, that technology is usually really, really expensive. But, you know, Neato, what did they do? It's in the article how they, you know, made a much cheaper version of a LiDAR system, which is
very cool.
Which is terrific. So
exactly, because the first time I heard about LiDAR is actually in police forces. We're using it for radar guns and radar detector companies were using it as well. So there was something about that. So it's amazing we've got this down to the consumer level now.
I just found it. So instead of thousands of dollars, the Neato's version of a LiDAR system only costs them about $30 in parts.
Wow.
And they released that themselves in a paper a few years ago.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Yep.
Okay, now we're going to pause for our sponsor. And conveniently enough, our sponsor is actually one of our co-hosts. And, which is what most of you know this anyway. But, Derek, you've got a new promotion running now for CleverHost. So why don't you tell us a bit about it and go from there?
Yeah, so, I mean, CleverHost was founded on the idea that you can have a good Canadian web host that doesn't charge a lot more than the larger American web hosting companies, which unfortunately you do see really often. And I got really frustrated with not being able to find a Canadian web host that was affordable, you know, $5.95 a month, $8 a month, what have you.
Right.
So that was kind of the idea, is giving people who can't afford $20, $30, $40 a month because they really want to support a Canadian company, a viable option. So we use cPanel, which is an award-winning control panel, to give our customers full control over their web hosting account. Our account management system, where you do your billing and that sort of thing, is really easy to use. And we embed into cPanel over 150 different web apps and scripts that you can deploy with just a few clicks. And I'm talking about things like WordPress, Drupal, an analytics software called Pwix. You don't have to rely on Google Analytics if you don't want to, or you know, other similar packages. Some e-commerce solutions like Magento, Tomato Cart, pretty much anything you want to deploy with a few clicks and then some time into that tool, you can actually get that running. And a lot of good positive feedback. We're always trying to move the service forward so that it gets better and faster. And right now we are running a promo for Canadian Tech Podcast listeners. So if you use promo code CTP16, that's Charlie Tango Peter 16, you're going to get 10% off your first invoice. And that brings down the cost to even more so. And we do bill in Canadian dollars as well, because again, that's what we believe in. So Canadian dollar or Canadian pricing from a Canadian company with servers in Canada, and Canadian support as well.
That's awesome. And I also have to add my plugin as well. I run all my websites, and a lot of my clients use CleverHost. And again, Derek does great service. Fantastic thing that you were talking about, the different apps on the cPanel. It's actually kind of fun once in a while just to go through there and see what's new, because it's so easy, you know, to try it. Like, you know, I do know how to, for example, install WordPress from scratch, but it's nice just to be able to, with a couple of clicks, boom, 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 and you've got a site up and running that you can play with. So, yeah, so definitely. So anyway, go to cleverhost.ca. We thank them for their support. And as Derek says, CTP16 will get you 10% off your first invoice. We thank them for their support. Okay, moving on. Microsoft, we were talking about them briefly earlier. They've been selling a lot of Microsoft Surface products, but not so many of their Luma products, right, Derek?
Yeah, that's what it seems like. So they didn't really break things out quite in this way, but they did give numbers on shipments for the phones. Shipments on phones is about down about 50% year over year. Which is not good. I mean, they just released some new phones a little while ago. So kind of like the way the BlackBerry Priv rollout happened, is we don't have a full quarter, I don't think, you know, worldwide on those numbers yet.
Right.
But what I did find interesting, trying to find the number right now, and I don't see it at the moment, but the number I heard for revenue on Surface devices. So Surface revenue did grow 29% year over year.
Mm-hmm.
I know I heard a number somewhere. I don't see it here right now, but I did some quick calculations and I thought, well, if we assume that the average price of a Surface device that was sold was about $650 US,
right,
which is fairly healthy, that translates to about 2 million Surface devices.
Yep.
And considering how young Microsoft still is at building their own hardware, I'd say that's pretty good.
Yep, exactly. And I've consistently heard some very, very good reports on the Surface. We're hoping to get in touch with someone who's actually been playing around. They've got a Surface they're going to be trialing in addition to an iPad. So the whole tablet thing or the hybrid model is definitely something that's growing. And I have to admit, I'm pretty impressed with both the Surface Book and the Surface Pro 4.
Yeah, I'd really like a Surface Book. I can't justify the $2,500 or $3,000.
That's still the issue, but it's certainly there's people out there, and you know, the tablet, and you know, as we've said before, you ignore Microsoft at your own risk.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, lots of people have said, oh, Microsoft's dead, you know, they're not sexy anymore. Well, I'd say they're pretty sexy these days. I mean,
yeah, coming back.
Yeah, like a quick overview here. So earnings per share, 78 cents. That beat analyst expectations by 7 cents. Quarterly? Was this quarterly revenue?
Yeah, 25.69.
Yeah, which billion. Is... Yes, 25.69 billion in revenue. Again, that beat estimates. Net income was 6.3, so really healthy margins. And the stock was trading up after that. They're back up over $50 a share. And pardon me. And Office 365, which is obviously something they've been pushing a lot, revenue declined 2%. But when you consider how much money that's already making, that unit is already making $6.6 billion in revenue with, looking like that going forward. And the revenue on Office 365 has actually grown 70%. So that business unit also includes like the old way of buying Office at the store for $500 or $600. Nobody wants to do that anymore. So that side of that revenue is cratering.
Yeah, exactly.
But they're making up most of that money on this new subscription model, which over the long run is far more predictable revenue. So that's okay. I mean, like they're doing just fine. Azure is up another 5%. That's at $6.3 billion. So between Office products and the Azure Cloud platform, that's over $12 billion. That's about half the revenue. So again, Microsoft's doing just fine.
Exactly. I think we'll have to ask them if they're interested in a courtesy donation to the podcast.
Sure, yeah. That'd be great.
In profit. And, we're saying all these nice things about them. So,
send us some Surface devices. I'll take Surface Pro 3. It doesn't have to be the latest. That's fine.
Exactly. Sure. But yeah, no, lots of stuff going on. Office Online, speaking of.
Yeah.
Real-time collaboration for files hosted by Microsoft partners. So this is kind of cool because I do enjoy using Office Online. Mm-hmm. But one of the things was I originally, and I still use Dropbox mostly. Well, now they're going to make this even easier.
Yeah. So the gist of it is that if you hate OneDrive or you really hate OneDrive for Business, formerly known as SharePoint, now you can use Box and Dropbox and Ignite, Citrix, and ShareFile to store your Office-type documents instead. So you don't have to use OneDrive anymore. That's the big deal. So that's with like Office.com signing in and messing around with your documents. Office for iOS, you can also use Dropbox and Box there. Again, support for Citrix, ShareFile, Ignite, and Edmodo is coming soon there. And I'm confident that eventually that'll come over to Android as well. So, Microsoft, Satya Nadella, as CEO, and Microsoft as a whole are obviously really committed to just making sure you use at least some Microsoft products.
Exactly.
And making it a lot easier for you to use it in a way that you feel comfortable.
And then that's exactly it. They're reducing the pain point. One of the things I really like here now is, and that's one feature that Google Docs has had for quite a while, that now that we can share via Box or Dropbox, you can have real-time collaboration. So two people working on the document at the same time.
Yeah.
Which is very cool. So we're going to have to, you and I are probably going to have to play with that too, because right now we use Google Docs to collaborate on the show notes, which I'm always messing about with while we're recording, moving things around and, causing my co-host to get worried when I temporarily lose a story or something.
So. Yeah. Oh, there it is. Okay. Yeah.
There it is. Yeah. I put it back.
We had another Microsoft one. Come on. Let's keep going here.
I know. So Microsoft, they've also realized that, they've got a phone product, but it's not doing so well. So they've been buying some other companies that do a lot of apps for iOS and Android. And one of the latest one is SwiftKey.
Yeah, this is kind of surprising because I didn't know if SwiftKey would want to get acquired. I mean, like, it's smart, really. They're a UK-based company. They've accepted an offer for 170 million pounds, which translates to 500 million Canadian. No, not that.
About
not
that, that. No, bad. Something no, like no, no. that. 250 million US.
Right. So, yeah, it's a little over 300 million Canadian right now. And, yeah, this adds on to the list of previous acquisitions like Acompli, which is now Outlook on Android and iOS. Right. Wunderlist, which is still Wunderlist, and I use every day. That's a obviously a to-do list app. And Sunrise, which is a great calendar aggregation service and app, set of apps that, again, I use every single day because I can't stand trying to book a meeting and having to look at four or five different calendars. Exactly. It just doesn't work for me. So. Yep. Yeah, I've been using Sunrise for over a year. I think I've been using for some Wunderlist for 2 years. So I am inadvertently firmly in Microsoft territory with where they want to go. And I was saying before the post or before the podcast that it kind of feels like Satya Nadella is like in my head, like being like, what would Derek buy if he had billions of dollars at his disposal? Well, I don't know about Acompli, but I certainly would have bought Wunderlist because I love it. I would have bought Sunrise because I love it. I might have bought SwiftKey, you know, if I needed a better keyboard for my phone OS that nobody wants to use. So, I was making jokes about, you know, Satya and I, yeah, we go way back. We got little nicknames for each other and everything. But I kind of wish it was that sort of situation. But and apparently SwiftKey is also behind the software used by Dr. Stephen Hawking's wheelchair. Yes. I was not aware of that.
Yeah, that's one thing I remember first hearing about, that they've done some specialty apps for him. And, it's just amazing stuff there. So good for them. Again, keyboard apps or what are they actually called? I'm trying to think. Keyboard apps.
Yeah, it is a keyboard replacement. Like, you can switch between the Google keyboard on Android or the SwiftKey keyboard. And SwiftKey is one of the first companies that brought swiping to the fore, so that instead of having to peck at all the letters you want to use to spread out to spell a word, you can actually
swipe around.
Tap, hold, and start swiping around. So, like, you know, D E R E K, just go up and right and back left again, and then
and
down to the K.
I've watched people do that, and it's amazing. A, that how quickly they get it, but B, you think about the software behind the scenes as it predicts stuff and learns.
Yeah, and think about it. We've had this on Android for like 3 or 4 years now, and you just got it on iOS a little while ago.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, you got SwiftKey finally with iOS 8.
Kind of cool. And it's nice to, again, that's the kind of thing where I always believe competition's healthy, because you get ideas from one, and, you know, imitation's the sincerest form of flattery.
You keep telling yourself that.
I keep telling myself that. Hey, it seems to work.
No, it certainly is. Absolutely. If you find a good idea somewhere, obviously you need to incorporate it. You can't just, you know, ignore it and keep striking down your own path. You're going to hit walls unnecessarily.
Right, exactly. So, okay, moving on. This is one I'm really kind of glad to see.
This is fantastic.
This is absolutely fantastic. Google, especially the Chrome browser, they're going to start blocking, or at least putting a warning up about deceptive sites and sites that use deceptive contents or ads to make you do things you wouldn't normally do, like a fake download button or something like that if you're not really watching carefully enough, or stuff that will let you get malware. And this is where I get most of the calls these days, when someone calls me up at Esclair Consulting and says, I have a slow PC, and, you know, I'll ask them if they have virus checking, and they say, yeah, but the problem is it's this malware which you've actually allowed, you've given permission to load, and, you know, you get these pop-up toolbars and all sorts of crap. So this is going to be really, really good. But one of the things is, there's actually a couple of the bigger mainstream sites, stuff like CNET, and one that really disappoints me is SourceForge, which is a repository for open source projects. Yeah. They have it now, and, you know, part of the reason is these sites cost money to run, and by working with these ad networks, it gives them some revenue. We still have that problem there. But the problem is when they get deceptive like this, it really can hurt the brand. So, yeah, they're going to, you know, these sites are going to have to do some changes. And I think it comes back to, we were talking, you know, a couple of weeks ago with Fortune magazine and the malware serving ad network it had. They're going to have to really pick a good ad network and make sure that, you know, this stuff's happening because, you know, a lot of cases, these sites are being kept around because of the Google traffic they get. So if they start moving further down to page two or three in a Google search, that's going to really affect the revenue.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something I've known SourceForge has been doing for a while. CNET absolutely does it. I'm going to check on this before I say it, but I'll keep griping in the meantime. So the really disappointing thing about SourceForge is that it should be the last place that does something
exactly.
like this. In principle, but it's owned by a fairly large company, and so, you know, getting to a yep. place where they make money is far more important to them than it is if it was more of an altruistic type project. And yep, I mean, I get exactly. it. I know they need to make money, but this is really the worst way to do it. Yep. On the other hand, the one download site I know of that is clean, it has ads, and the ads can certainly be a little annoying, but they're not deceptive, which is the important thing here, is filehippo.com.
Oh, really? Okay. I haven't heard of them for years.
It's run by Well-Known Media. Well-Known Media also runs the guys who make CCleaner, which
CCleaner. Yep.
Yeah. Piriform. There we go. So it's kind of like the umbrella corporation.
I didn't know that. That's kind of cool because I love CCleaner. I recommend it, and they're a great, great company to work with.
Yeah, and they have some really cool cloud-based tools as well. And for like if you want to put CCleaner on multiple computers and or like run it across an entire business, they've been heading in that direction, which is neat. Yeah. And but anyway, yeah, filehippo.com. Spelled really normally, filehippo.com. They are committed, and they promote it quite loudly on their website, to safe downloads. They actually screen which programs they accept and put up for download as well.
Right.
So, again, it has ads, but good ads.
But again, I don't mind ads if they're not intrusive and they're not, you know, it's exactly so. Well, I have rebookmarked FileHippo then, so that's a good sign. Excellent. Okay, now on to our local story. We actually had here in London the last couple of days, we had a agricultural conference here in London.
Yeah.
And agriculture is an area where a lot of people, they don't really think tech when they think agriculture. And even within the industry itself, it's still kind of, it's getting there, but it's adapting and embracing it in a big way now. Just because, you know, farms are a business like anything else. And, you know, we've often heard about, you know, the new combines and harvesters and tractors. Well, you know, there's tractors with built-in GPSs. There's even drones that can map insect infestation in cornfields. Mm-hmm. We were talking laser probes earlier. There is a lot of stuff going on. And there's an article in London Free Press this week. They're forecasting it's going to become a $4 billion global industry within a few years.
Yeah, it's not really surprising. I mean, now $4 billion amongst combines that cost like $1 million, right? So it's like you can get to $4 billion pretty quickly when it's like $1 million a piece. But this sort of thing, so this technology that was, or this product rather, that was unveiled here in London is called Laser Egg, or a company called Laser Egg, and they actually have...
Freaking
lasers on their heads. No, it's the same technology that the Mars rover Curiosity is using to analyze mineral composition of the rock samples that it's obviously analyzing up there. The same technology now in small black devices, smaller than a puck, you know, but in like a circular type device. Yeah. QR codes on top for tracking and that sort of thing. And you can actually buy the same technology being used on Mars for your farm now to get soil samples and help figure out, I mean, soil sampling, you need to know your soil so that you can figure out what kind of fertilizer to be using, what kind of nutrients your soil might be missing and therefore how to fertilize and that sort of thing. What crops you can grow in that area, because some crops need more nitrogen, some might need, some other mineral in the dirt. And again, if you are like, you know, if you're cycling your crops, again, which crops are going to behave best in which parts of your farm? So I'm not a farmer by any means, but that sort of thing is extremely important. And they're starting to use this similar technology in other ways, so that your machine that's laying down the seeds will actually stop at the end of a row instead of just dumping a bunch of seed at the end, which is just a waste of money, obviously.
Exactly. Yeah. It's little things like that. My grandfather was a farmer over in England, but, you know, even there, the technology is changing a lot. And it's little things like that. We talk about, you know, I know a lot of gardeners will talk about soil samplers, and it's essentially the same thing, just on a much, much bigger scale. And, yeah, this will really help make the job easier for them. And if you know most farmers, they're very busy. They always have something going on. So this is a good example of some good old Canadian innovation here. So yeah, good for them. So I'm really hoping to see more from them. And again, we're going to see some other innovations in the agricultural sector going forward. So yeah, this is great news. Okay, I think we're about done. We just have one more. So we had one more sponsor, yeah. And it's the other host. I don't know if that's good or not, but anyway, I just wanted to point out to folks that, yeah, I do run a consulting business as well, and I do a little bit of this, a little bit of that, but no, I offer at sclarkconsulting.ca, we offer hardware and software support. So again, we were talking about viruses and malware earlier, stuff like that. If your laptop's acting up, I do some system consulting because there's so many new services. We actually talked on the show today about using, Dropbox and Office 365. Not everyone quite gets that yet. So I offer training and support in that. And one of the big things, and people who know me always know I'm talking about backup and disaster recovery, because it's so important to keep your precious pictures, particularly if you have kids. Keeping the picture safe will keep you from getting on your spouse's angry side. It's very important. So definitely, if you're interested, definitely take a look. We've always got some deals going on. So contact me at sclarkconsulting.ca. And again, we'll have the link in the show notes. So last but not least, stuff we like. I'm afraid I've got nothing this week, Derek.
I'm so disappointed.
I know. I really thought, but there's just nothing that's really, really crossed my eye. Again, the agricultural stuff, some of the stuff we've talked about today is very cool.
Yeah, it is.
But nothing that's really on my list. So what do you have this week?
I have, just like last week, something a little different. It's not an app. It's a content management system for websites, not WordPress, not Drupal. This one actually doesn't rely on a database. It's called Grav, G-R-A-V. The website is getgrav.org. Getgrav.com is something very different. Don't go there. Getgrav.org. Well, it's not bad. It's just it's not going to
take you. It's not what you're thinking about. Okay.
Yeah. It's fantastic. It is a flat file CMS, which means basically that everything is stored in text files. It supports Markdown. So if you're a big fan of Markdown, and that's it's a way of marking up your text so that it actually gives it formatting. This supports Markdown, and it's really simple to use. If you're a designer and you like using Twig or Markdown or Symfony for your styling and your structure, this supports all of that. It's really SEO friendly, so if you're a marketer and you're having a problem there in some way, again, you can get human readable URLs site wide. You can set up per page metadata without a bunch of WordPress plugins and that sort of thing.
Right.
Backing up your whole site is really just download a copy somewhere. Again, there's no database to restore or like in WordPress case or Drupal's case, config file or configuration file to work through to make sure everything is set up right with the right username and password and that sort of thing. If you have access to a command line, lots of command line tools. So there's really something to satisfy just about every desire or need for working with the content management system.
Right.
And to make it super easy to get going, they have what they call skeleton packages. So it's the CMS itself and a theme that you really like that's ready to go. So the 30 different ones, and the themes that are built for, that have been built for Grav so far are all really, really nice.
I'm pretty impressed. I'm looking at a couple of sample sites here, and, you know, it's hard to believe this is built on a flat file.
Yeah.
There's just some very, very cool stuff. It's definitely something at some point when I have some time I'll have to look in, because I can certainly see for some people, particularly, you know, maybe someone who's not a web designer or can't afford one, you know, but maybe doesn't quite, you know, like a Squarespace or a Shopify, this could be a nice solution for them.
Yeah, it's I'm actually moving CleverHost's website from WordPress to Grav. So I'm in the process of getting that done. Lots of plugins for things you might need, like the theme I chose. Well, actually, Grav itself doesn't have a blog built in. I only need a blog for to talk about news and do a little bit of content marketing for
right.
Clever. So I don't need it all that often, but regardless, I need a blog of some kind. So there's a plugin for that, and it's working really quick, and it's fast, and
right.
I really, really like... it even has like caching built right into it for static files, for the Twig templates, that like the structure of the site. So mm-hmm. yeah, definitely check it out at getgrav.org. It's open source. It's being built by the guys at Rocket Theme, who build and sell templates for Joomla, WordPress, Magento, PHP,
yep.
BB, etc. And but yeah, they're giving it away. There will be
this
a paid
cool.
version at some point, like for extra features, but
right.
really,
this
supports like 98% of your needs, I would say.
I'm hoping at some point there'll be like a one-click installer, so you'll be able to add it to the... I always screw up the name, the Installa whatever.
Installatron.
Thank you, Installatron.
Yes.
So that'll be interesting. Yeah, no, it's very, very impressive. I've been looking at this kind of off and on a little bit this morning. So, yeah some of the themes are... fabulous.
Yeah, I can send this to Installatron and ask them to include it. There's really no reason why it shouldn't work.
Hopefully we'll see that soon and make it even easier.
Yeah.
And another reason to sign up at CleverHost. There we go. So, okay. So we are done for this week. Another fabulous show.
Mm-hmm.
So for episode 58 for February the 4th for the Canadian Tech Podcast, my name is Stuart Clark.
And my name is Derek Saltzman.
Thank you and be well.